With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Bill White, John Tudor, and Tommy Herr all headed to the Cardinals Hall of Fame as the inductees for 2020. Welcome to the program. My name is Brett McMillan, and we're talking with the latter two today. Rather, Dan McLaughlin is talking with Tom Herr and John Tudor, part of a Cardinals Town Hall. Maybe you're familiar, but you can check out a Cardinals Town Hall just about every week here. And you can also see reruns at cardinals.com/townhall. John Tudor with the Cardinals from 85 to 87 and again in 1990. Remembered best maybe for a stellar 1985 season. He finished second in the Cy Young Award, a slow start, and then roared back for a 1.93 ERA, went 21-8 on the season. Tom Herr, meanwhile, was with the club from 79 to 88, a .274 career hitter with the Cardinals, 31 triples and 498 runs scored, a consistent figure at second base here in St. Louis for so many years in the 1980s. Tudor and Herr joining Danny Mac. Here it is right now on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
We welcome everybody that's decided to come into our town hall and have a chance to visit and hear from the newest members of the Edward Jones St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Fame. It's John Tudor and Tom Herr. I'm Dan McLaughlin, Cardinals broadcaster. And again, we want to thank Edward Jones for putting this on. And if you have any questions, you can go to your chat device and the chat icon and ask questions as we go along for the next few minutes and hopefully make this an entertaining night for you. But John Tudor, Tommy Herr, congratulations. And John, I'll start with you as we go back on a Zoom meeting, try not to talk over each other. So I'll start with you. What's it mean to go into the Cardinals Hall of Fame? And congratulations to you. It's very well deserved.
Well, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. No, I mean, it's a great honor, obviously. And, you know, to be voted in by the fans is just makes it even more special to, I've said a number of times, just to be, you know, linked with some of the names on that list. It's or all the names on that list, for that matter, is a great honor.
What was it like, the phone call that you got from Mr. DeWitt? Take us through that phone call and finding out about it and your emotions of realizing that you're headed to the Cardinals Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, I almost didn't even answer it. It was because it came from a number I didn't recognize, from a city I didn't recognize, and I think, you know, and Tommy knows from probably reading stuff, that I'd had a little incident with my hand that day, and I thought maybe it was a doctor calling me, so I answered it, and to my surprise, it was Mr. DeWitt, which a pleasant surprise, obviously, but it was a special moment.
Tommy, congratulations to you. I see you smiling as you watch your former teammate, John Tudor, answer these questions. I'm sure you guys will be smiling back and forth, but congratulations to you. What does the Cardinals Hall of Fame mean to you?
Well, you know, it's really hard to put it into words. I mean, I was, to be quite truthful, I was just ecstatic to be on the ballot, you know, and I know Whitey has been vouching for me with the Red Ribbon Committee for a few years and making a case for me. And he was so excited he got me on the ballot. You know, he called me a couple months ago and said, "You're on the ballot." So that in itself was, for me, was really exciting. And, you know, my story with getting the call from Mr. DeWitt is, you know, I refused to answer it because I didn't recognize the number, and I deleted it off my call list and everything. Finally, Larry State texted me and said, "Hey, this is one you want to take," you know. So we finally hooked up, and I heard the good news, and I apologized to him, said, "I'm sorry I didn't take your call before." But, you know, I felt pretty stupid about that.
What does it mean to you? What were your emotions going into the Cardinals Hall of Fame? And with that, what were the memories that maybe started flooding back for you as you realized that, you know, this is a great culmination of a wonderful career that you had in St. Louis?
Yeah, well, you know, what it means to me is, you know, obviously, it's such an honor, you know, to be recognized along with, you know, the greats of one of the greatest organizations in baseball. And, you know, I did an interview the other day and the guy said, you know, what's it going to feel like standing there with Bob Gibson and Lou Brock and some of the other Cardinal greats. And I said, I'm going to make sure I stand behind those guys, you know, because, you know, that's it's kind of boggles your mind to even ponder that.
We were talking the other day, Tom, that you grew up a Cardinals fan. So this has really kind of come full circle for you, hasn't it? From a little boy to now going into the Cardinals Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's weird because I, you know, when I really first started getting interested in baseball was in the late 60s when the Cardinals were very good and, you know, went to back-to-back World Series in 67 and 68. And, you know, back then the World Series games were day games and I can remember coming home from school and you know, putting the radio on and listening to the World Series. And so, you know, obviously, you know, I had a connection there with the Cardinals and really, you know, I grew up, I was also a San Francisco Giant fan because Willie Mays was my favorite player. And so I always followed the Giants and those great teams that they had with Mays and McCovey and, you know, Tito Fuentes and Jim Rayhart and Dick Dietz and Bobby Bonds. You know, I was a, probably more of a Giant fan than anything, but the Cardinals were right up there with the Giants.
John, I'll go back to you. How easy did Tommy Herr and Ozzie Smith and Pendleton and some of the others on that infield make it for you and your job? Now, you did a lot of it, but, boy, you had some pretty good defense behind you, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, not only just the infielders, but the outfielders as well with, you know, Vince and Willie and Andy running around out in the outfield. I mean, I've said it over and over again that, you know, shame on me if I didn't throw the ball over the plate and let these guys hit it and let these guys play behind me because they made 99% of the plays and you know, that 1% they didn't make were, you know, line shots in an alley somewhere. So it's, yeah, I mean, for me, you know, coming to St. Louis was was amazing having sat in the dugout and watched them play when I was with Pittsburgh in 84 and just dreaming about getting the chance to play here.
You know, John, when you reflect on your Cardinals career and your ERA wound up being 2.52, your winning percentage is over 700. The ERA is the all-time best in Cardinals history. Was it just getting to the right situation for you or did something click for you in your career when you got to St. Louis?
I think it was both. I mean, I think it was the majority of my numbers, I think, are a reflection of that ballpark and that defense. You know, you play other places and, you know, playing Fenway for 4 years and, you know, some of those fly balls to left field or doubles off the wall or home runs into the net. And you know, Pittsburgh, shoot, we just had trouble catching the ball in Pittsburgh. So it was definitely fun to get to St. Louis. And like I said, from having watched them play, I sat in the dugout, like I said, in St. Louis when I was with Pittsburgh, sat between Larry McWilliams and Rick Rodin and the three of us. We knew somebody was going to get traded in the offseason. And I never thought it would be me, but I was certainly glad that it was.
I'm going to mix in some questions from our guests that are on this. And again, we appreciate everybody that's come in to see the newest members of the Cardinals Hall of Fame, John Tudor and Tom Herr. And I love this question. This is from Kevin McDonald. He says, John and Tom, be honest now. Are you still angry or are you angry at all at Don Dankinger? So, Tommy, I'll start with you. Are you over what happened in 85 or how do you view that situation?
Well, you know, that's a play that, you know, really obviously was pivotal in that series. And, you know, I know I was very angry at the moment. You know, I had probably the best view of that play than anybody had, because, you know, I was kind of migrating over from second base. You know, it was a little topped ground ball between first and second. And, you know, one thing I always say is I just wish Jack would have run to first base and let me have it. And it would have been a routine, you know, a routine catch and toss, and nothing out of the ordinary about the play if it happened that way. And, but Jack, he came off and made a good play, and Todd was covering. From my vantage point, I could see that obviously the guy was out, but Don kind of got, he tried to get himself in position, and he moved into foul territory and was actually moving towards home plate as Order was moving towards first base away from him. And so I think he got himself a little discombobulated and ended up missing the call. And of course, I was right there. I got in his face right away, and you know, the big argument transpired and all that. I think that the devastating part about that was, after the game, we went back into the visiting clubhouse, and they were taking all the plastic down off the lockers. They were carrying the trophy out of the locker room, because, I mean, they had it all set up for us, ready to go, ready for a celebration. And, when we saw that, it just kind of, I don't know, it created an atmosphere that we were just not able to rebound from. You know, I remember getting on the bus the next day, and it was quiet, and we just didn't have a good feeling about things. And, it's a game that you always feel like when you have a chance to go for the throat, you know, you get it done and get it over with. And when you give another chance to a team, oftentimes they take advantage of it. And Kansas City certainly did that in Game 7. I mean, they came out and just smoked us, and it was over early. But no, I'm not still mad at them. I mean, I've been around the game long enough as a player and as a manager that, calls are part of the game. I mean, now it's different because you can challenge calls, and that's certainly one that would have been challenged and gone our way. But, you know, at the time, there was nothing we could do about it.
How about for you, John, as you reflect on it, where were you in the ballpark and what was going on, either, you know, where you were situated or inside the Cardinal dugout?
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously just sitting in the dugout, and it's hard to see the actual play from the dugout, but obviously in replays and all, to all the world, Don missed the call. I mean, I don't necessarily blame Denkinger. I mean, I honestly believe that if he hadn't missed the call, we would have won the series. But I look back on my failure in Game 7, not, getting the job done, and that's, one of the real low points for me in my career in St. Louis.
I'll stay with you, John. For fans that don't know, where are both you guys situated, and what are you doing these days? What keeps you busy? What keeps you occupied?
Not a lot keeps me occupied at this point. I'm in. My wife and I moved to Greensboro, Georgia, about 18 months ago. We've been here, like I said, about a year and a half. Built a house, so we've got the advantage that we're sitting on a lake, which is nice. So we can go out in the boat if we want to. But just kind of like everybody else, hoping that this mess is over, pretty soon, and we don't screw it up.
How about for you, Tommy? Where do we find you? And you mentioned that obviously you've been in coaching and managing at different levels, but what keeps you involved in the game of baseball too?
Well, I'm just a fan of the game now. You know, I did manage in independent baseball. There was a team here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where I live, that in 2005 they They built a $30 million stadium downtown. And, you know, we had a team in the Atlantic League, which is, as far as the food chain of the independent baseball, the Atlantic League is probably at the top of that because it's a veteran league. A third to a half of my roster had big league experience and a lot of double A and triple A guys that had, you know, washed out, been released, or, you know, were trying to rehab an injury. You know, that's a good league for them to try to make it back into affiliated baseball. But I've always made this home base. My family is here. My parents are in their 90s. They're still living. So I'm here for them. And my wife, Kim, her mother still lives here. Her father passed away about 20 years ago. But so, you know, this has always been home base for us. And that's the way it's going to stay probably. I don't really do a whole lot these days. You know, I love to golf, you know, so I haven't been able to do much of that, but you know, I'll get out and play as much golf as I can. I like to hunt and fish. I have a little hunting camp up in northern Pennsylvania, up above Williamsport that my boys and I go to quite a bit. So, you know, we're up there a lot and, just trying to kick back. You know, I'd love to be back in the game. You know, I send out emails every off season trying to get a job, but it's a tough nut to crack unless you know somebody or have a buddy that's in a hiring position. It's tough to get your foot back in the game.
Take me back to seat cushion night for Tom Herr, and how many people say that, oh, I was there at that game? About a million people say that. So what comes to mind when you think of seat cushion night?
Well, the one thing, I can't believe how many seat cushions I've signed over the years. I mean, it's unbelievable. Every time I go out there for an autograph session, you know, there's people that have seat cushions. I kind of thought they all threw them on the field, but you know, apparently a lot of them kept them. But that was, you know, what stands out to me about that game was that it was an early, I guess mid-April game against the Mets, who were at that time were, you know, coming off a world championship, and we knew they were the team we had to beat if we were going to go anywhere in 87. And so it was a big game, and it was a big win for us early in the season, which, you know, every game we played against them was crucial. So that was the highlight of the night for me, that just that we had won the game.
John, I'll go back to you. 1985 was just an incredible year for you, but yet you started out 1-7. Tell us the story of how things turned around for you and who kind of caught a little bit of a mechanical flaw in what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I had a buddy that I grew up with and, you know, played against in Little League and played with in high school. He was actually the catcher on a high school team. And we happened to be talking one day, and we were, you know, just, you know, talking baseball like he and I usually did. And I was talking about the struggles that, you know, Mike Rourke and I were having trying to figure things out. And he mentioned just a little mechanical, I call it a gathering point in my delivery. And so, you know, that kind of, you know, rang a bell, and, you know, Mike and I went out and put the time in, put some work in, a couple of bullpen sessions. And, you know, I don't know if it was just the mechanical thing or if it was the mechanical on top of the mental part of it that just kind of set sail. And, you know, I just kind of rode that Cardinal baseball wave, almost to the end.
I'll stay with you, John. And Tommy mentioned the seat cushion night against the Mets, and it's one of the great rivalries that we've had in recent memory and Cardinal history, really, ever. What was it from your perspective? Because the fans loved it, but for you guys in the thick of it, I'll start with you, John. What was it like, the Cardinal Met rivalry in the mid '80s?
It was a good rivalry. I mean, they were both we were two pretty good teams, and they were. They were the mouthier of the two teams. You know, they had a lot of guys that liked to talk, liked to pop off, and so it made it fun to beat them. And you know, we took our turns with each other, without a doubt, going back and forth. I mean, we won in 85, they won in 86, we won in 87, and then I was with the Dodgers in 88, and we beat them in 88. So it was an interesting rivalry. Like I said, they had you know, a couple of guys that, you know, liked the media, you know, and New York was certainly the place for that. So it was interesting. It was fun. Good teams.
So John, you would have been perfect in New York, because I know you love the media. So you would have been perfect.
Yeah,
on that team.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. I tried to get traded there a few times. I actually was drafted by the Mets. So it's, I could have been one, I guess.
How about from your perspective, Tom, when you look back at the Mets Cardinals rivalry, what made it special from your perspective, those two great teams?
Well, you know, John kind of hit on it. We, I think in a way we felt a little bit maybe disrespected by the Mets, or at least by the New York media. They just couldn't believe that we could compete with them. And, you know, every year they were the team that was picked to win. And, you know, we felt like we were pretty good too. And we knew that we matched up well against them. I mean, for a few of those years, we matched up good against everybody. You know, nobody really wanted to play us because of the way we played. And, you know, we would, we had a way of disrupting the opponent, especially pitching staffs, because they were so worried about the stolen bases. And, you know, you would see teams pitch out more, or, you know, pitchers trying to slide step, and we just kind of got them out of their rhythm. And, you know, with the Mets, they had such an overpowering pitching staff. You know, there were series that you'd go into New York and, you know, you'd have Gooden and Darling and Ojeda or Frank Viola or Sid Fernandez sitting back to back. And, you know, as a hitter, you're thinking, man, you know, I could get an 0-for-12 hung on me this weekend pretty easy, you know. So, you know, they weren't – it wasn't a scenario that you really looked forward to, but, you know, we always seemed to rise to the occasion when we played them, and we, you know, we had their number, I think. You know, really all we – our goal every year was to just try to play the Mets even, you know. I think we played them 18 times, and we figured, you know, if we could play them even – you know, we were going to beat the other teams. You know, that was the thing that we really did better than they did. You know, we beat the teams that we were supposed to beat. And a lot of times, you know, they would get up to play us, but, you know, they were kind of a free-spirited group. And sometimes I think they took other teams for granted. And, you know, they'd get knocked off by the Pirates or some of the lesser teams. And, you know, that was what really separated us in those years that we won.
I'll stay with you, Tommy. Whitey had such a profound impact on baseball in our community and for over a decade, and winning great players. What does Whitey mean to both of you? And I'll start with you, Tommy. How about Whitey Herzog? When you hear that name, what does he mean to Tom Herr?
Well, I owe, you know, probably this, you know, this honor, you know, I owe it, you know, first of all, to Whitey. I mean, I had a lot of great instruction in the minor leagues with the Cardinal organization, but Whitey, you know, he's the guy that gave me a chance to play at the big league level. You know, he liked the qualities that I had, and, you know, I had put some really good years together in the minor leagues and had good stolen base numbers. And I was a switch hitter that, you know, could run, obviously. And you know, I was the kind of player that he was looking for. But you always run the risk with a young player, you know, are they going to be able to do it at the big league level? And Whitey gave me the opportunity to play and showed confidence in me. And that's what I needed as a young player. You know, I felt like I didn't want to let him down. And, you know, my first couple years as I was getting my feet wet you know, in the big leagues. You know, it all came together pretty quickly in my career when we went to the World Series in 82. And, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was kind of overwhelmed by that at that point in my career. I got much better, you know, through the, you know, the middle 80s and late 80s. But, you know, I owe tremendous amount to Whitey. And I learned a lot from him, too. You know, I learned, you know, I don't think there was a better tactical manager in our era anyway, you know. And he always seemed to have guys in the right spot at the right time. You know, he would, you know, he would give guys opportunities to succeed, and he was very good with handling his pitching staff, and so it was fun. It was fun to be a player. We had a lot of confidence in Whitey. We knew he wasn't going to screw the game up late in the game by making some kind of a bonehead move, and you know, that kind of freed us up just to play and leave the thinking part of it to him.
How about for you, John, Whitey Herzog and his profound impact on your career personally?
Well, just bringing me to St. Louis, I think was a big impact on my career, getting a chance to play in St. Louis again with that defense in that ballpark. But, you know, just to touch on what Tommy said, you know, Whitey just never seemed to be, overmatched or overwhelmed in a game. And I think that demeanor, you know, kind of flows downhill, you know, to the rest of the team. And, you know, if you see your manager getting, you know, frustrated and, you know, out of sorts in the game, then that has a tendency to fall on the rest of the team. But when the manager always, Whitey always seemed to be one step ahead. I mean, I've sat there a number of times and tried to figure out why he just did that. And then, you know, two innings later, you'd see why he did it. And, you know, Tommy said he handled the bullpen exceptionally well. You know, all of our bullpen guys, they knew what their role was. You know, Kenny Daly knew that if in the eighth inning, Darryl Strawberry came up with the go-ahead run or the tying run on base, he's in the game. So he knew to be ready for that. And Ricky Horton knew the same thing, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit earlier in the game, maybe like the fifth or sixth inning if the starter got into trouble. And when your players have an idea of what their role is going to be, it makes them prepared for when the situation occurs. And, you know, Whitey's always been, you know, near and dear to my heart. And he was the big reason I came back again in 90, because that, you know, I knew that, you know, playing for Whitey was something I wanted to do. Playing in St. Louis was something I wanted to do. And he just let you play. As long as you showed Whitey that you were going to give effort, you were going to go out there. I mean, he very easily could have quit on me at 1-7 and, you know, thrown somebody else into the rotation, but he gave me the opportunity to battle through it. And you know, things turned around.
You guys have a favorite Whitey story you can share? Is there one that you always think about or comes to mind that is, let's just say PG for everybody on this, on our call here, but I'll stay with you, John. Is there a funny or an influent, you know, a story that really means a lot to you when you think about Whitey Herzog?
I think the one thing that kind of shows you how Whitey was is, I mean, you go back to, I mean, we had a couple of brawls when I was with the Cardinals and a couple of good ones against San Francisco. And I just remember, you know, Whitey going toe-to-toe with Roger Craig and you know, pulling Joel Youngblood off of Ricky Horton's back. So Whitey not only showed you that he was calm and collected in situations, but he also showed you that he was willing to go to the mat for you. And I think that, you know, those are big things as well for a player, to know that your manager has your back if things get a little bit out of sorts. And Whitey certainly did that. He wasn't shy about getting there to mix it up.
We love showing that every time. We actually show that Ricky Horton has a mean body, a bone in his body, and is willing to fight, which people are shocked with. So I get to see that video every year. How about for you, Tommy? A favorite Whitey story that maybe you could share?
There's a lot of them, but I think we were at the airport. I'm not sure what airport it was, but And I guess Whitey, he might have imbibed in a few beverages on the flight. So as we're walking through the airport, we had this very long flight of stairs to go down, and something happened, but the rat fell down those stairs, and I think he hit every stair on the way down, and he got to the bottom, in the bottom level of the concourse, and he gets up and he makes the safe sign like he's an umpire and picked up his bag and just kept on walking. It was hilarious because, we weren't sure he was going to be okay, but he hopped up there and said safe and, just kept on trucking. So that was probably the funniest thing I ever saw the rat do. But, he was just a fun guy to be around. We had our share of great wins, but, you have your share of tough losses too throughout the course of any season. And, he managed to just really keep an even keel through all that. And I think that, as John said, that, that has a way to permeate down through the rest of the team. And we never felt like we saw him in a panic mode about anything. And that was good. That was a good type of leader to have.
Tommy, I'll stay with you. Biggest influences in the organization. It could have been a guy like George Kissel or a teammate, whatever the case may be. But who are your biggest Cardinal influences as you reflect now? And I'm sure you've had a lot of time to reflect on the last few days of just Cardinal memories, but your biggest influences wearing that Cardinal uniform.
Yeah, well, I would be remiss to not mention some of the guys that, as I was coming through the Cardinal organization, I was an undrafted 18-year-old American Legion player when I first signed with the Cardinals. And, I started out in rookie ball in Johnson City, Tennessee, and the manager there was a guy named Tom Burgess. And, he would sit the team down after games and, we would talk through the game and he would, say things that were done right during the game and things that were done wrong. And, that was the first time in my career that I really was forced to sit down and think about how to play the game. So, I think that had a huge impact on me because it made me more of a thinking man's player, it made me a better situational player, even at a very young age. And then as I moved up, I played for Hub Kittle in St. Petersburg. He managed the Cardinals High A club that year. And Hub had a huge impact on me because he was a tough, grizzled old veteran guy. And, he taught me, the toughness that it takes to be an everyday player. You can't feel sorry for yourself. You're going to have ups and downs and you just got to keep grinding away. And I think Hub was, he was huge for me to learn from that. And then, later on in my career, I played for Hal Lanier, who was, he was an accomplished major league middle infielder. So that was good for me to really learn the nuances of playing the middle infield. And, Hal was a good strategical guy too. And he was intense. He was fiery. And, I think he had a very big impact on me. And then of course, George Kissel was, he was the minor league field coordinator through my minor league years. And, George was just a treasure trove of knowledge. He would talk about, certain situations that may come up in a game and, where you should be. And, I was just like, a dry sponge soaking it all up from George. So he had a huge impact as well.
That's great. How about for you, John? And you think about your Cardinal career, we mentioned Whitey being a huge influence, but maybe some teammates and others that come to mind.
Yeah. Well, I didn't come up through the Cardinal organization. I came up in the minor leagues with the Red Sox. And again, like Tommy said, I'd be remiss not to mention a guy named Chet Nichols, who was a banker in Pawtucket when I got there. And I don't know what it was like in the Cardinal organization, but I mean, I never had a full-time pitching coach until I got to the big leagues. 4 years in the minor leagues, we didn't have pitching coaches. We didn't have hitting coaches. It was the manager and a player manager. And Chet Nichols was a former Boston Brave pitcher, left-handed. And he's really the first guy that sat me down and after a game and said, "Hey, why'd you do that? Why didn't you do this? Why? What were you thinking when you did that?" And I mean, I'm all the way in AAA at this point, and before anybody's even really set, because I came up as a power pitcher, so for me it was, you know, here, rear back and let it fly and see what happens. But I get to St. Louis and you get a pitching coach in Mike Rourke, who spent a lot of time with me, trying to get me on track that first year. So I've got a lot of respect for Mike and Whitey. And, player wise, Danny Cox and I seemed to hit it off as soon as I got to St. Louis. And whether that's a good thing or not, I'm not really sure. But Danny brought that intensity to the game that was infectious as well. And, he was all business on the mound. And the other guy that was that way was Bobby Forsch. And Forsey was a great example for young pitchers. Forsey's one of those guys you didn't talk to the day he was pitching. He was focused and, throwing up in the locker room before the game. And so you pick up little things from different guys. And Danny and Forsey were two guys that I kind of latched onto in St. Louis and learned from, because I wasn't a young player. I mean, I was 30 years old, I think, when I came over to St. Louis, but I was only really in my fourth year. I was in my fourth year in the big leagues, fourth or fifth year in the big leagues. And so we were still learning. I was still, I'm still trying to learn today.
You said Bob Forsch, and of course he's in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. And then you mentioned Roger Craig and Whitey Herzog. So now you're making me think, John, about One Flap Down and Jeffrey Leonard. Tell me what you and the pitching staff and Bob Forsch obviously was right in the middle of that and put one where it needed to go in that series. But what were you guys thinking when you were watching that? And then how are you going to handle that as a pitching staff?
Yeah. I mean, Forsch was the perfect guy for that because he didn't care. He got tired of seeing Leonard do that. And out in San Francisco, I think. Right. Just drilled him and turn the tone of the series. We won that. That was a huge game. That was a huge win for us. If we lose that game, I don't know if that's game four or I think that would have been their third win. I don't remember because I know they spanked me in St. Louis. And, at that point, I remember turning to, I think it was Lee Thomas and saying, this is good because now I get another shot at them. And we were able to turn that series around and get to the World Series, which didn't end the way we want to end either. Forsey was definitely the leader of that pitching staff during those years.
Tommy, I'll go back to you. 1982, you think about the infield that's there, Obergefell, Ozzie Smith, yourself, Keith Hernandez. Does that infield not get enough credit for maybe being one of the best, if not the best, defensive infields ever in baseball? You guys were that good.
Yeah, well, that's been brought up a lot more lately than it was before. But, it was – obviously it was a very good infielder. I mean Keith is as good as you can get at first base. He's the most athletic first baseman I've ever seen. He was great at, covering bunts and, he could get he could pick up the ball and throw it to second base from a lot of different areas on the field. And, he would even pick up balls and throw it to third base on bunt plays. And of course, Ozzie, you don't really have to elaborate too much on Ozzie because he's recognized as the greatest defensive shortstop of all time. So I think the two, Obergefell and myself are the two guys that, you know, probably hold that infield back from being considered the greatest of, you know, or in the conversation anyway. And that's, that's legitimate as far as I'm concerned, concerning me, because I was early in my career, really nobody even knew that much about me at that time. And, I feel like I became a much better defensive player later on than I was that year. And Obi was just, he was just solid. You know, he was a solid player that didn't make mistakes. If he caught it, he was going to throw you out. He had a tremendously accurate arm. He was, very good at coming in on balls. And, so he was solid. And there's no doubt about that. So, I mean, it's not for me to say that's the greatest infield. I mean, it was a very good one, that's for sure. And, any team that wins a World Series, you need good interior defense, and that team certainly had it.
Well, you're selling yourself a little short, because you were so good that you led the league in fielding percentage multiple times at second base. Now, I want to ask you about turning double plays with Ozzy in terms of how he led you, and then in terms of you flipping the ball if you were just in the vicinity of second base on a double play. Pull back the curtain for our fans a little bit, and just what that was like turning two one way or another with Ozzy Smith.
Well, from receiving throws from Ozzy was great, because he was very accurate. And he asked me very early on, where I liked the ball, and that's where I would get it, most of the time. So, I was a guy that liked, I liked to come across second base when I turned the double play. I didn't like to stand on the bag and catch it and turn it from the bag. I would always try to get to the bag early and step to the throw wherever it was coming from. And then I was typically, when I would catch the ball, I was about 3 feet, inside the baseline, and I'd make my pivot and throw. And so Ozzy was very conscientious about that. He gave me, and we worked a lot together. We would take a lot of ground balls before the games and feed each other. And, getting the ball to him for him to turn the double play was more problematic for me, because, there were a lot of times when, he was so acrobatic, you could really give it to him anywhere. And, you weren't sure if he was going to come across the bag, or if he was going to jump over the guy and throw it, or what he was going to do. So basically, what he wanted me to do was get it to him as quickly as I could, get it to him early so he could decide, how he was going to throw it to first base. There's so many highlights of him jumping over runners and flipping it from every which contortion that he chose at that time. But yeah, I just didn't want to screw it up. I wanted to get him the ball and let him do his thing. So, it was awesome to play with him. I became a spectator a lot of times, just watching the great plays that he made. But a lot of work went into it. A lot of time was spent before the games getting acclimated to one another. And like I said, I think the more we played with each other, the more comfortable we got. And, I really feel like probably the 84, 85, in that range is when we were, the two of us were at our best.
John, did you ever have a play that was made behind you by Ozzy that you were just sitting there saying, holy smokes, I can't believe that he just did what he did? Is there one that stands out for you?
I mean, I've seen him make dozens of them. For me personally, I don't have one come specifically to mind. But, the play I love to watch on replay is that one with, I think it's he and Vince coming in. Ozzy going out, Vince coming in, and Ozzy diving for the ball and Vince basically going over the top of him on a fly ball. And, that's an amazing play for me. But just going back to, there's more than one or five occasions I've had a ground ball back up the middle to me that I possibly could have made a play on, and I just would take myself out of the mix and just let it go through, knowing that either Ozzy or Tommy, whichever the side of the bag it was going to be there. And if you know, you take me out of the mix, it's a much it takes 50% of the chance of error out of it. And I've done that a number of occasions, started to reach for a ball and said, oh, nope, you know, Ozzy's got it or Tommy's got it, and you know, let him play. And just going back to what Tommy was talking about with Keith, I never got a chance to play with Keith or Obie. TP was as good as it gets at third base as well, Terry Pendleton. He was as athletic a third baseman, and I think that he and Ozzy worked a lot together. Tommy was talking about Keith making plays on bunts. I laid down a perfect bunt with a guy on second base down the third baseline, only to have Keith Hernandez in Shea Stadium come running across and pick the ball up and throw the guy out at third base. And like, God, I mean, what do you have to do, you know, with the guy? And Ozzy was definitely amazing. And, you know, those were good times.
John, did the players get a kick out of Willie as much as the fan base? I mean, we've been at Whitey's golf tournament. He said he believes that Willie is the most popular player in the history of the Cardinals ever. He said he's the most popular ever. So we know as fans, we get a kick out of him. And I get to see him every day as a coach now, and it's fun even then. And I got to cover him as a player and see him come back to St. Louis. So from your perspective, being a teammate, did you guys get a kick out of watching him?
Yeah, I mean, Willie's fun just to walk around. I mean, you know, he was, you know, you wouldn't know by watching him walk how fast he was, or he always very modest, very, you know, soft-spoken. You know, Willie, he always kind of gave you the impression that he'd just come from home and his dog had died, you know. But he was fun to watch. There's no doubt about that. Fun to watch run. You would get that lean going, coming around second base, and you know, as fast as Vince was from first to second, Willie was equally, if not faster, from first to third. And they both were just fun. They were fun to watch.
Tommy, I'll go back to you with Willie. You go to the 82 World Series. He hits a couple of home runs, takes one away, and it's one of the great performances ever in World Series history against the Brewers. Was that kind of his coming out party at that time? Or did you guys know, hey, we got a really special talent, just no one else knows it?
Yeah, we had a, you know, we had a feeling that Willie was going to be special. And then when he had that tremendous game in game three of the 82 World Series against a real good pitcher, Pete Vukovic, yeah, that was a coming out party. But Willie was, he was so bashful that, you know, even when he became a great player, you know, he never really acted like he was a great player. You know, he always acted like he might get sent back to AAA at any day if he went 0-for-4 or something. You know, he was very quiet. But he, you know, he's one of my favorite teammates of all time, because, you know, you could always count on getting, you know, the best that he had that day. You know, he was going to give it everything he had, and he cared. You know, that's the thing, when you're a teammate of somebody and you know that they care, you know that they're going to have a bad day every now and then, but you know, the guys that act like they don't care, you know, they're the ones, they don't win, you know. And Willie was a winner. You know, he cared about, you know, just doing what he could to help us win, and we all appreciated that.
Tommy, I'll stay with you. You won in 82, so close in 85 and 87. Out of those three teams, if you had to rank them or just look at what were the better teams of those three, which one comes to mind for you and why?
Well, I always say that 85, I think, was our best team. But, you know, they were all good in their own way. You know, obviously, you know, the 82 team, we had Bruce at the end of the game, which was a huge weapon. You know, he was the elite closer in the National League that during that time. And, you know, that changes the whole dynamic of the game when you have somebody like that at the end of it. And that was back in the time when, you know, Rat might bring him in the seventh inning with two outs, and he'd get a seven out save. You know, it wasn't just a three out thing like most of the closers do today. But the 85 team, you know, from top to bottom, we had more guys have great years that year together than any of the other teams. And I think our pitching was as good as it ever was that year. You know, we had two 20-game winners and an 18-game winner, and a very good bullpen with Worrell and Daly down there. So, and we had, you know, we had specialty pitchers. You know, Ricky did a great job that year. And so that, to me, that's the team that really stands out. And, you know, we had to win 100 games just to win our division to get in. You know, that, to me, that's the best team.
Yeah. And a guy named Tom Herr drove in 110 and only hit 8 home runs and was moving runners up and doing everything else that needed to be done with that offense. And so I'll go back to you, John, for a second. You know, you think about that style of, ever think we'll get back to Whitey Ball and that great era of what you guys provided and the entertainment that you provided? It's entertainment too. We forget that sometimes. It was so exciting and fun to watch you guys. Do you see baseball getting cyclical and coming back that way at all?
I don't know. Baseball doesn't generally come back to where it was. You know, it's in the history of the game, from what I've seen of it anyways, you know, we talk about pitchers nowadays, you know, after six innings, you know, kissing their hands, tapping themselves on the chest and thanking God for the fact that they were able to go five innings. It was different when we played, and it was different 10 years before we played, you know, with the Gibsons and those guys. I mean, they're throwing complete games like that was just second nature. And nowadays you don't see them, but I don't know. You see that style anymore. The game has become more individual. I think now it's more stat oriented. There's 700 different stats for baseball now. Used to just worry about, you know, batting average and earned run average and slugging or RBIs and that. But now there's, I don't even know all the things there are, and or for that matter, what half of them mean. it would be fun to see. I think I saw Tommy interviewed one time, and he would have liked to have seen how that 85 team would how teams would react to the 85 team in this modern game right now. I think they would have been set back and shocked and not quite knowing how to do it, how to play against us.
Well, I wanted to ask you that, John. Could you imagine with Willie and Tommy and Ozzie and some of the others with the way that they're running wild, how that would have had an effect on a pitcher? Did you guys ever talk about that? Like, thank God we're on this side of it, because that other side, that's not a lot of fun.
No, I mean, the amount of times we used to make fun of Gary Carter, because every time Vince would run, Gary would pretend like he dropped the ball. And, you know, then he'd be banging his mitt and saying, you know, we'd be going, yeah, you know, you had a chance, you were going to get him. I mean, I saw Mike Socha come up and throw through to second base when Vince wasn't running. You know, Vince was amazing at taking two or three hard steps and stopping if he read something wrong or if he didn't feel like he got a jump. I mean, I've seen more times than not where the catcher come up and threw, you know, like Socha came up and throw through right over the bag into center field, and he wasn't even running. It not only Vince, but Willie and Tommy and Ozzie and Andy Van Slyke and Terry Pendleton could run too. And, you know, it was, you know, guys off the bench, Lawless and Tito Landrum. And I heard Tommy make the statement that Andy Van Slyke make the statement that, you know, that he was thought he was watching track meet and a baseball game broke out. You know, they were just amazing to watch play.
What is it like for both you guys? We only have a few minutes. This has flown by. I could ask you questions. I know you'd love it if I asked you questions for at least two more hours. But so, John, I'll stay with you. What's it like when you guys come back to St. Louis even now? Because the era of which you played, it truly is one of the great eras ever in that organization's history. The Cardinals, Whitey Ball, Tudor, Herr. I mean, you guys are favorites. What's it like even now to come back?
That's great to come back. I tell people all the time when I, you know, people that I don't get recognized quite as much as I used to, you know, probably 20 years ago, I probably don't look the same as I did 20 years ago. But back then people would always come up to me and say, oh, we really love those teams. We love watching you play. I remember my dad taking me to a game, or I grew up going to Cardinals baseball, and you know, you were my favorite player, or Tommy was my favorite player. It was fun. It's not the same game anymore, and it's not the same game for anybody anymore. The game has changed, but it's, you know, it's baseball. Baseball evolves, and hopefully it continues to evolve in the right direction.
You know, Tommy, you were back in St. Louis, I think it was last year, and he came up in the booth and visited with us, and you wouldn't believe people were just, every time you guys come up, they're like, this is the greatest. We got Tudor here. We got Tommy Herr here. So I know you're appreciated. So from your perspective, Tommy, what's it like coming back to town even after all these years?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I literally feel like royalty when I go back to St. Louis. I mean, that's how you're treated. I mean, just the love that you feel and the people reminisce about, you know, they used to go to the games and I mean, they really loved that, that era and those teams. And to me, it's a real reflection on really the genius of Whitey and putting that product together on the field, because, you know, basically he orchestrated the whole thing and then sat back and managed it. And it was just a phenomenon. And, you know, the games themselves were more like social events than games. You know, people would dress up and come and they were appreciative of the effort, and they recognized the opponents when the opponents did something well. And it was just the whole atmosphere was incredible. And, you know, getting back to the point you were talking about early about could those teams compete today, I really feel like, you know, the things that we did well, like especially the 85 year, I mean, that team, in my opinion, could play in any era, because, you know, as much as the game has changed, the last two World Series winners have been the teams that strike out the least, you know, so that was a team that could put the ball in play, and once we got runners on base, we knew how to get them around, and we had very good pitching. So, I mean, to me, that team could compete in any era. The reason we didn't hit a lot of home runs is because our ballpark was so big, and most of the other ballparks in the National League were big. You know, now the ballparks are smaller, so if we played today, we'd hit more home runs. You know, I the year that I hit eight, you know, playing in today's part, you know, that might turn into 15 or 16 instead of eight. So, you know, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of qualities that team had that translates to any generation, I think.
I'll go back to you, John, and I'll wrap it up with you, and then go back to Tommy. And I should tell you guys, we're just so many messages saying thank you for what you've done for the Cardinals. We're excited to see you go in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. So, believe me, you're beloved back here in town. So, John, I'll finish it up with you and then go to Tommy. What are you most proud of as you reflect back on your career now and it culminates going into the Cardinals Hall of Fame? What are you most proud of?
Oh, gosh. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like I said, I was a guy that just tried to go out there and give my best effort all the time. I mean, if anybody was to say what I did well, it was that, you know, I played the game the right way, I think. I mean, you know, I ran balls out hard when I was eight, when I was, I don't want to use, I use the term very loosely, a hitter, but I tried to play the game the right way, play the game hard and give my best effort all the time. And, you know, and I took the ball when it was handed to me, and there were some days where, you know, it might not have felt great to do that, but those are the things that you do as a teammate for guys that you really, that you love and that you enjoy playing with. But, you know, I just want to say just quickly, I really appreciate the fact that Cardinal people and the Cardinal fans voted myself and Tommy into the Hall of Fame, because it feels good that's the way this took place, and And I'm grateful for all the days I spent in a Cardinal uniform.
And I'll wrap it up with you, Tommy. Well put, John, and we appreciate you. How about for you, Tommy? What are you most proud of as you reflect now?
Well, you know, to me, it just comes back to winning. You know, I was all about winning. And I was fortunate coming up through the Cardinal system. You know, I played on a championship team every year, rookie ball, A ball, double A, and triple A. So when I got to the big leagues, I was, you know, winning was part of my psyche. And to be able to go through that run we had in the 80s and continue to win, that's what I'm most proud of, you know, that I could contribute to a winning atmosphere. And that's the way I tried to play. You know, if I had to hit a ground ball to the second baseman to move the guy to third, I'd try to do it. You know, that was just the way I learned how to play. And So I think I look back on it and feel proud of that, you know, that I was able to contribute to maybe one of the greatest eras of Cardinal baseball ever. You know, that's always up for debate, but, you know, you ask those fans that were there in the 80s and they'll vouch for me.
Oh, they would, believe me. Hey, guys, thank you so much for doing this. I know our fans loved it. We can't wait to see you at the ballpark and officially get that red jacket on there and enjoy it and celebrate your careers. But our fans, man, they love you guys, I'm telling you. And it's awesome to see you go in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and it's so well-deserved. So, John, Tommy, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
You guys got it.
Great seeing you.
You too, buddy. Take care.
What an incredibly special era in Cardinals baseball. For those who saw it, they remember it fondly. For those of us who didn't get to see it, we only wish that we could have seen Whitey Ball unfold in all of its glory. Playing fast and quick on that turf at the old Busch Stadium, too. Special thanks to Tom Herr and John Tudor for joining Dan McLaughlin. Danny Mac does such a great job with those town halls. Again, I think I mentioned it at the top, but if you'd like to check out previous ones, he's had all manner of former player and current player as part of those town halls. You can check them out at cardinals.com/town hall. Our podcast is available anywhere that you get your podcast, including cardinals.com/podcast. We would encourage you to subscribe, rate, and review the program if you enjoy it. For Dan McLaughlin, John Tudor, and Tom Herr, my name is Brett McMillan. We'll talk to you next time on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.